So how did Quiet Quiet Band get its start, and how did it get its name?
Oh, that's on me. Yeah, so it used to be just me doing stuff on my own. And then, some sort of virus started picking up band members. So originally when it started, it was really quiet. So it was all minimalist, sort of quiet, and that's how it goes. And then drummer, bass player, electric guitar, and then so it became quiet songs played really loud, I guess.
Yeah, it was kind of the polar opposite to our last band, which was properly noisy.
Yeah.
And the idea was to do something quieter, but it didn't stay like that for long. So,
and we kept making the cues.
Cues
look nice.
Yeah, cues are good on logos.
Yeah.
We're only competing with Queens of the Stone Age and the Wax.
And Queens, right. But all of the Queens.
So do you guys go by the like the initials QQB then most of the time? Or like do your fans call it that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, not people who know us sort of have heard of us before call us that, but we like to introduce our full names.
Or you guys could call yourselves 2QB.
It's quite a nice ring to it, isn't it?
It's a difficult one because you have to say it usually three or four times before it gets.
Everyone thinks it's quite quiet.
So you're quite quiet.
Quite
quiet, or that you've accidentally said the word quiet twice. Yeah. So you have to repeat it several times. Which is probably good. Maybe it helps it stick.
Yeah.
Now, where do you guys get some of your influences? Because I've seen some like rather obscure influences. Well, I was pleased to see Sparkle Horse in there because I'm a big Mark Linkous fan. So, so how does that come into your songwriting process? Those types of influences.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about Mark Linkous and then the other things along that trend, so it's all really that Genesis nugget. So, is that the first Sparkle Horse record where somebody lent him an 8-track? Somebody lent him an 8-track and he got snowed in or something, and he wrote that whole Viva Dixieland Submarine.
Yeah,
is that what's called, that record? Yeah, so he wrote all that, and then the guy made him give it back, and he was like, oh, I've got the tape, so I better go out and make that. So that's kind of how it started out as well with me. But then, I guess the second Sparkles album is kind of more like how this turned out, right? It's where you get a bit more of a budget. Not that we've got a budget. But for some reason, I've got incriminating photos of these guys and they keep coming back. But I used to give them the negatives. So, it's that also mildly Lynchian view of the world. I guess the sort of obscure suburban country vibe, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's pretty, it's pretty influential in your sound too, and it melds well because you have such a rhythmic beat, but then you've got such an alt country overlay on it at times.
Yeah. It's
not to just throw a bit of everything in, really.
Yeah.
I can't decide on any particular genre.
not anymore. I think that used to be the case, right?
Some days we want to be gypsy punks, and then we go back to that darker folky stuff, the kind of Will Oldham stuff. We do still have and write quite a stuff, but the album that we're loaning with, that we're doing, is kind of tended to come out a bit louder. Songs that started out perhaps a bit more like that, sort of a bit more downbeat, got a full makeover really, and came out different beasts.
I guess it's kind of a snapshot of where we were when we were doing the sessions for that album as well.
Yeah.
So we just everything we did just seemed to naturally get. It wasn't like a conscious decision.
It was just excitable, basically.
Yeah.
It also comes too much shit. Comes as a byproduct of playing in rooms where everyone's talking. You have to just talk louder, don't you?
That actually leads into my next question about how did the songs on Low Noon evolve from when you first started writing them to the final recordings?
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. So there's a few bits on there. So some came out of the blocks like they are. So 10 Gallons is kind of...
Hasn't really changed.
Yeah, that came out of the blocks.
Fudge sounded like that after about one jam.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, so Fudge is our song in G. Everybody's got to have a G. That's our G one. We get that for free. Bunks I used to sing, and then when we came to record it, I realised that I couldn't really sing it.
So,
so I got the honour.
You smashed it up. Yeah, that was good. But then...
There's other ones like Battery Human, which start off as a sort of really acoustic sort of folk protest song about aliens. It was fun, but it sort of felt like it was taking itself too seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we just sort of slapped a load of... it got real heavy and real rhythmic, and there's sort of slightly ridiculous sci-fi undertones, and it's just really fun, but it really worked. Sort of that song sort of went from one place to a completely different place.
Yeah. It's really interesting, actually. The ones that at the front of the record are the ones that probably started out so much, so much quieter, or such a different vibe to what they ended up with.
It's the Deja Vu influence of when we were on the drive into the studio, we were listening to Deja Vu by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and we were sort of listening to it and going, the first sort of front-loaded part of this album is absolute bangers.
It's killer, killer, killer.
And then it sort of gets weirder in the second half. That's how the album will be sequenced. It's purely based on that one album.
Now, how do you think you guys have evolved as a band from Flatlands up through Low Noon, and what do you think you've learned what to do and what not to do during the recording process and the writing process and so on?
I think the big leap was realizing, Flatlands was kind of recorded, one instrument at a time in Dev's bedroom. And then it was kind of then going into studio and realizing, we could track it like all together at the same time. So it's kind of a lot of the progress, I guess, came out of learning how to record for us.
Yeah.
We kind of had favorite albums with that sound, and that sound being. Sounding like they went in and got smashed up for a couple of weeks and, played it all through, recorded all the takes and then just took the best ones. So that's kind of what we were aiming for, and we ended up doing that. We did it across a couple of sort of weekend sessions, played it live basically, so all of us played to each other. It's quite hard to do. It's much better. It feels like more of an achievement because you kind of went in and recorded the songs and then came out and didn't really do too much to them, so it was a fun process, but it was hard work, and that's something we really aimed for, and hopefully it feels more like it, that's the thing.
I had to learn all the songs inside and out
until
we hated them and then
now you sound like a different and harder band, I guess you could say, than you do in your earlier recordings that you can find on Bandcamp and SoundCloud. One song in particular that sticks out of my head that's pretty socially relevant now is Ripped to the NHS. And I say that because we're having the same issue over here in the States with Obamacare. With that being a powerful message, what is your stance on nationalized healthcare or good health as a basic human right or the privatization and monetization of healthcare?
It's unbelievable to me that people have to pay for healthcare. It's absolutely insanity. And I was in New York in November, and this is what I didn't realize, is you've got like storefront doctors to say, come in and pay me for this service. Yeah, you've probably got this wrong with you, come in. They're like, what? You're crazy. And we're competing with each other, sharing each other in a retail market. And then if you take that as an extended it to the concept of maternity. So the basic reproduction of a species is something that you've got to budget in. The baby's before the budget. Crazy. So the cost, what's it cost to have a baby in the US? Unbelievable.
What's this about? Several thousand.
Actually, my brother had two kids and they were about $50,000 a piece.
What?
I'm dead serious.
We're
bringing like rabbits down here.
And here's another thing too. This isn't private information because he talks about it. But my youngest nephew or his youngest son was classified with stage 19 autism, and he has to pay $100,000 a year for his education.
Wow, that's just insane.
Yeah, I guess it's we're blessed.
I don't know how lucky we are, and that's a problem because people don't.
Yeah, and that's why it's
really
always in the news.
Care enough about the cuts and the changes, and they won't know what they had unless we end up in a situation like that.
It's ramping up though, right? So we've got an election here in May.
Yeah.
So we've got the election in May. So the rattling of the boxes and the rosettes are all coming out. I think NHS week on week is getting more of an issue. Well, there's a massive Michael Sheen. Massive Michael Sheen impassioned speech on that there interwebs.
It's like also just pro NHS party like round London. because they were trying to shut off hospitals in Southeast London. There was a big campaign to save them and stuff last year. They're trying to cut everything now.
Yeah, and the Obamacare thing is, and I hate to sound like an ignorant opinion giver, but that's what we can do. It's crazy to me that there's an angle for people saying, "Hey, you don't want this." How on earth can somebody have the gall to turn around and say, "Hey, you don't want that sort of healthcare that you don't have to pay for? That's going to be really bad for you." And people are eating it up.
Yeah,
it's mental. Right, soapbox out.
Well, you know what I think is ironic with, like, my country is that our Constitution says that we have the right to the pursuit of happiness. Well, having bad health impedes on that right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, so let me ask you this. As of right now, okay, if you had to go to the hospital in the United Kingdom, how does the NHS work and what does it do now versus what it might turn into?
I guess at the moment, if you get hit by a car, you get picked up and you get dealt with, you jump the queue if you need emergency op, they kick everyone out of the way, and it's free of charge if you pay your national insurance, which is just the national scheme that we all pay into from our salaries.
Yeah.
And what they're talking about doing is selling it off to private organisations, because it's basically a massive loss leader. Excuse the pun, but it's hemorrhaging money.
They keep talking about, like, the NHS needs to make money. It's like, that's not what it's there for. Its aim is to look after people,
it's not
to make money.
It's not free anyway.
We
give money to the government, and they decide in their good wisdom what to do with it. You know, and that's really what I think they should be doing with it. You know, and that's how people feel. But it's not generally what they are doing with it.
The whole system feels like it's a bit upside down, and it feels like we're doing a massive bit on the NHS now, which is great. I'm happy to give it all the time, but let's I'll give you one last word. The whole pay structure is upside down. The nurses get paid nothing, and the guy that does the IT architecture gets paid what, 5 nurses worth?
Yeah,
he keeps nobody alive. Yeah. Sorry.
That's the way it is here too, so we do have something in common. Well, getting back to the music, how do you feel the internet and social media have changed and helped or hurt the way independent artists such as yourself have been able to promote your brand?
I mean, I think the internet is a wonderful thing for the promotion of music, right? Like, the ability, you know, if you think back to even just 10, 20 years ago, that if someone wanted to put a record out, you'd have to sort of garner enough invitations to get signed to a label, and they would give you a lot of money up front to go to a studio, and you'd be massively in debt. Whereas, you know, people can, you know, spend not even that much money, or basically no money if they want to, you know, download something illegally, and produce really quality sounding music and share that with everyone in the world. I think it's a wonderful
thing. Yeah, I mean, we're speaking to you now, standing in front of a laptop. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's definitely a good thing. I mean, in terms of, for little bands, I think it's great. I mean, in terms of little bands making money, which you've got to do because you ain't a charity, it's quite difficult. Certainly in this country, I'm sure it's exactly the same in the US. But, you know, there's not a lot of money in giving your stuff away, is there? So you've got to make some money somewhere, otherwise you can't exist.
Now, do you feel the money is more in the gigs at this point?
It's got to be, yeah. Money from fees for gigs and selling merch. So, you know, a lot of bands are putting stuff out, like this record is self-released at this stage. It's costing us a very small amount of money to actually put it out there. There's so many places you can post the album. We want to make some money, yeah. We ask for money for fees for gigs. We print some T-shirts. We'll sell some CDs. We still do the old school stuff. We like CDs, physical stuff. People like owning something, so that's where we're going. But,
well, if you think about it from an internet point of view, if you think maybe there's one guy in 500 or one lady in 1,000, that might give a toss. Right? Might like, oh, hey, I like quite a bad song. If you haven't got a means to get out and hit so many people, well, you get maybe 5 people. Hey, 5 people, like, Whereas now, if you're in a broad spectrum and you can find that one guy in a 1,000, and then one of you 10,000, you go, hey, I want to do this. I want to stick this on when I go to the gym. And I'm going to do this while I'm putting my kids to bed.
You've talked to people, you know, via Twitter or Facebook, and, you know, email, you know, people write to us and say they enjoy it, and that's lovely. So it gives you a real opportunity to sort of interact rather than up straight after when you play it, you're sweating, gross, and sort of just want to be.
Now the old guard, as you could say, then, you know, i.e. the major labels, have had to change their game basically because, you know, the smarter, you know, competition from indie labels and the indie artists themselves have given them a run for your money, or run for their money actually. But let me ask you this: having said that, if you were offered a major label recording contract, would you take it, and why or why not would you take it?
Good question. Dave, would you take it?
Because you have to think about the band, too. They're going to come in and say that you got to change this, you got to change your clothes, the songs are different. And
we got to do a Pepsi advert. Yeah, we'd do it.
I don't like Pepsi. No, actually, I'm not really promoting Pepsi.
Sorry,
other
colas available.
I could like Pepsi, depending on the
potential. Well, what if Capitol Records came in and Simon Fuller or something came in and said, okay, you guys are going to wear the same clothes and we're going to call you Two Direction.
Or maybe Quiet Direction.
I can't see it happening with us. I can't see a major label, you know, seeing what we do and thinking, yeah, I can definitely spin that a bit and get a couple of dance routines in there and quite badly going to sell me a ton of Pepsi. I just don't, it's just not what we are, so it's not. Don't really have to worry about that, unfortunately.
maybe a bigger indie. A bigger indie offered us a deal and it was going to take us to a new place, then I'm sure we'd go for it. Everyone kind of strives to have that moment in the limelight, don't they? Whatever it might be, standing on a festival stage.
It's a good point you make, Ryan. I'm not going to lie, I would love to have a big briefcase full of money and I would love to blow that waste out. It would be great to have a budget to record with, right? It'd be incredible. Imagine the things you could do.
I'd love to quit my job, you know, and if it meant that, I would have to seriously consider it.
Yeah. But there's, I never, you know, to entertain for a second the fact, I mean, you guys have an idea and I get stressed out about it. I have sleepless nights. And you're normally right, but I still have sleepless nights. If it was somebody I didn't like, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Loosening the icy grip would be
it would probably kill me.
If you're really rich though.
Yeah. Probably get too drunk, wouldn't we? Yeah.
Well, you can also take the money now and then, you know, do what you want later.
We'll probably get sort of like a Neil Young situation, won't we? And we get sued by our own label for making music that doesn't sound like us.
Yeah. We wouldn't do that, so.
You literally enter the Twilight Zone with that major label shit, man. Well, let me ask you this then, going back to the internet, do you feel that file sharing helps or hurts the independent artists, and do you think it affects services like Bandcamp, iTunes, CD Baby, and Google Play, and so on and so forth?
I think it probably does for sure affect those services, but only a certain number of people kind of use file sharing sites. I mean, a lot more people use, you know, Spotify, Bandcamp, and that's kind of music library, isn't it? It's music rental. How many of those people go on and buy a CD or then go on and say, I'm not going to buy it from the artist, I'm going to poach it from a pirate site? I don't know. I'm sure there's stats on it, but I don't know. We're not so sure about, you know, we, like everyone else, are giving stuff away for free, and, you know, sites like Bandcamp and Spotify are really useful for getting people to hear your music. But, yeah, pirate sites, I'm not anti them, but...
I think most people are happy to have the opportunity to do things legally, really, if they have that access to...
Yeah, it's like the file-sharing boom was at a time when, you know, you couldn't get music in an easy way online.
Yeah,
exactly. It came to that. Whereas, like, so we can put a free download on SoundCloud or Bandcamp. I think it's less hassle to go there and do that than it is to, like, you know, install some malware in your PC or something.
Things like, unless I'm wrong, Spotify and Bandcamp, more like a response to file sharing.
Maybe that's it.
You know, that file sharing is effective. They've grown up with it, you know. So, I don't know, to say that it affects them, it's kind of their reason for being, partly.
It's kind of a double-edged sword in a way, because it gets your name out there, but, you know, you don't know how much you could have sold in a way.
Yeah, well, that's the same with all these outlets, isn't it? I mean, you probably read the articles on Spotify about how much money per click people get, and it's an insanely low amount of, like, revenue generated for artists. It's got to about pairs of ears rather than penny.
Yeah, I think like 300. I mean, I think if you sell 300 tracks, you can buy a stick of gum or something, man, with Spotify.
For them to share, I've been pirating our music onto SD cards and just pushing it into the cracks of the walls.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I've just been dead dropping it all over.
I'm just chucking all the shit.
Yeah, I tape onto the back of a goose.
So, well, let's get into some musical history, okay? And what I'm thinking of is every decade has a musical sound or style that most people will say defines that decade. Like, if you think of, like, the 90s were the grunge era and the 80s were the new wave / glam metal era, I guess you could say. But the 2010s are kind of, like, just kind of all over the place. Where do you think Quiet Band fits into this decade, and how do you think that it, and do you think that it is easier to be more diverse today than it would be in the 80s or 90s or even the last decade? Because if you think about the last 5 to 7 years, really, there's really no movement. Like I said, the 70s had disco and punk. You know, the 80s had new wave and glam metal. The 90s had grunge, alternative, and we're kind of out there.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, kind of, sort of trying to work out how much of that, like, comes around sort of almost looking back, like, retrospectively, sort of, you know. I remember reading, like, the oral history of punk in the 70s, and there were a lot of people at the time saying it didn't feel like it was a thing. There's anyone that looked back and was like, oh, this was, like, a cohesive thing. Everyone was kind of ended up going in the same direction at the same time.
It's not a movement until it's part of history. And maybe, you know, we kind of feel a little bit like kind of outcasts, you know, the dudes in school that don't fit in. But we almost sort of did that, I guess, inadvertently, but deliberately, didn't we? I mean, your songwriting takes all these kind of influences are from all over the place, all spectrums, all genres, right back to the kind of Victorian times and really old blues music. So, you know, we love a little bit of music from all of those decades, but we're not. Yeah, I mean, I guess we're off the pop pulse in terms of what's big. I don't know what's big in 2010s. Maybe
we might know in the 2020s. Yeah,
we might know the 2020s. How about that?
Well, what can we expect from a QQB show? I mean, because you guys have some pretty raucous music, but it's, like I said, it's also melodic, and you can hear the alt country in there too. So, what are your shows like?
Barely restrained chaos.
A little bit of dancing if people have got their shoes on right. You know,
snappily dressed. Exactly. You can expect 6 well dressed young men sweating for other people's entertainment. I think it's so many times you just go and watch bands and like, not bothered. You're not bothered. Why should I be bothered?
We're bothered.
We are very bothered.
We're very bothered.
So what are your audiences like then? Are you guys drenched in panties or is it like, you know, the golf clap all night?
Yeah, it's basically all women watching us, right? Yeah.
Nice.
No, it's not. I wish it was.
We've got the sort of strokey beard crowd.
Yeah.
Some people that get involved in some dancing.
Yeah.
Tom brings a good crowd.
It's a fairly kind of artistic crowd that turn up, but we're always surprised. There's always people that go, oh, I come see, I really like you because of this, and you're like, what? Yeah, they look
like R.I.P. to the NHS or something like that. Yeah.
And they're not dancing or throwing some weight around, they're just stood at the back.
Yeah, nice. So if people that have seen us before, it's shouting and jumping around and having a dance. And if it's people that haven't seen us before, there's about 2 songs of people staring going, what are they doing?
Yeah.
And then about 2 songs and they're going, oh yeah, I really like this. And there's kind of a magnet effect. And that little gap at the front just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then people don't mind being spat on or being sweated on. Accidentally, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then it's going off. So yeah, it's nice. See, watch out for us blowing other bands off the stage near you.
Well, where's the most unique place or venue that Quiet Band has ever played and why?
I think it's probably we played a film festival in a warehouse last year, which was amazing. It's like the sound and the echo and like the lights and stuff, it was crazy. But like our sound check had to be, we were sound checking just before the film festival started, so the guy kind of comes on stage and tells us we've got to cut our sound checks short because they've got to start screening a film about Rent Boys.
He didn't tell us it was about REM boys.
He just sort of started.
That was the film. So depressing. Were there any people watching it?
Well, yeah, only half of us actually watched it. I watched it.
No, I watched it.
It was properly disturbing, and it was quite early in the day.
It was really harrowing.
It was really harrowing.
11 a.m. is too early for REM boy confessionals.
REM boy suicides.
Yeah. It was good.
Sorry.
It was a good game. We were just in a very weird place by the time we started.
That is awkward, man.
It was a brilliant day. It was a lovely day.
Definitely the weirdest one. Yeah.
Well, do you guys ever plan on coming to the States?
We'd
love to.
Sure, you can stay at my place, man.
We'd love to.
We might
come when it's warmed up a bit. That's all right.
Cool.
if you know a good place in Chicago to play, then we'll
I know three.
We'll play for beer.
Two of them are called Hard Rock. So
they're called what?
Two of them are called Hard Rock.
Yeah,
we actually have one of the coolest, I think, Hard Rock cafes here in the States. I don't know. I think you guys have one in London, and
yeah. London's got a zillion little venues. It's a crazy place to try and work your way around. So we feel like we've got maybe if that major label thing comes off, we'll have enough money to sort of get one of those blacked out kind of buses and drive around.
We'll get a Hummer.
Maybe a plane as well.
Yeah.
We've got to try and trick someone big into taking us along. Right?
Yeah.
A Madonna.
We fit so well on that.
Well, what does QQB have coming up within the next year? What are your plans?
Well, the album's out today, which is very exciting.
Which is March 9th.
Yeah.
So we're going to be, doing some shows to promote that. We've got a gig on Friday the 13th to sort of do our big sort of launch gig. But then, and then after that, I suppose we will probably record the next thing. So
we're already writing it. So that's quite exciting. These songs are on Lo Nuna, kind of been around a little while. So we're putting together the next chapter, aren't we?
Yeah.
Which is, always exciting as a band, just to kind of go to the next thing. We're also looking at some festivals. Obviously, it's probably the same in the US, but there's some big old festival scene here in the UK, and it's nice to get out and try and play to some bigger crowds, some crowds of music enthusiasts who happen to be drunk and happy in the sunshine. So I think we'd have a good effect on those people.
Yeah, we're a decent festival booking.
We go down well at festivals.
Festivals are always good. I love festivals, man.
Yeah. Oh, there's some great ones that we're hoping to play at. No spoilers, but
Well, where can we find Quiet Band online?
Ooh.
So Twitter is @QuietQuietBand.
Yeah.
Yep. Right.
Facebook
is Quiet Band.
QuietQuietBand.bandcamp.com. That's got all the, I think, everything we've ever released is streamed on there.
We
have got .com as well.
Blog on there. We've got tracks up on SoundCloud as well, which seems to have just grown immensely in the last couple of years to being this kind of proper beast now, isn't it? To kind of everywhere, do a bit of
iTunes, Spotify, all that.
Bit of Googling and you should find us.
Yeah.
Pictures of our faces, perhaps not as dingy as this camera.
And you guys are on Spotify and all that other stuff too, right?
We have a video on YouTube as well for Backstreamin.
There's some live stuff on YouTube as well. If you want to have a look at the, envisage being a sweaty, quiet band, there's a few.
There's some really good live ones on YouTube, actually.
The ones from the Water Rats are quite nice.
There's some really good ones on there.
So the album will be on Spotify. Might not be today, but
this week.
Yeah. The industry beast has not been so kind to us by having it on there on the day because we didn't have enough money to pay him.
I've been dealing with a Soviet level of bureaucracy.
Yeah.